Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gangway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah. Good day, tokers and tokettes. It's hour two, Toker Talk Radio, where we let down what's left of my hair and get to chat with you guys. Unfortunately, I can't chat with you guys on the phone line yet because I haven't quite worked out the bugs in my call-in line when I'm on my remote studio. So I got to get that all worked out. We will as soon as we can because I'd love to be talking to you. But you can join us in the chat room right now. Michael Hughes, John Thomas, BTC, all in the chat room. John Chambers as well. Lots of great folks chatting things up on today's live show. Glad to see you all out there. I am in the on the seventh floor of the Hooters Hotel and Casino, because, you know, when I travel, I'm all about class and sophistication. No, I typed into hotels.com and it was the cheapest hotel. Okay, folks, don't get any ideas, okay? I tell you, when I go down there into the casino floor area and see all those scantily clad Hooters girls, maybe I'm offended. I don't know. You don't believe a word of it, do you? No, I'm sure you don't. Well, folks, we got a great show coming up here for this Toker Talk Radio Hour, because one of the things I do in this job that I feel incredibly blessed to be able to do is to speak to our drug war POWs. One of the first people I met in 2009 who had served any time for marijuana violations was Bobby Platshorn. And Bobby, of course, was Black Tuna, and he was a marijuana smuggler in the 70s, and just got out after doing, you know, 29 years in the slammer, and he was sentenced to 64. So not so bad if you were doing, you know, if you're expecting to die in prison. At least he got out. But he's in his 60s now, and he's formed the Silver Tour, and I've talked to him numerous times about his, you know, almost three decades in prison. Earlier last year, I got to meet Jeff Mazansky, the Missouri prisoner who had been serving life in prison for pot. He did 22 years before finally being released, and I got to speak to him at an event. And at this event, I finally got to meet Dale Schaefer. You may remember the story of Dr. Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer. It's in the book Cool Madness, and both of them have been call-in guests. In fact, I spoke to them on my show before they went to prison, like they were, you know, a week or two away from turning themselves in and going into the federal prison system. And I finally got to meet Dale in person now that he's out 5 years later from serving his mandatory minimum sentence. And it's just amazing when you get to meet these people and imagine how bitter or angry they must be about this. But really, most of them that I talk to when they come out, they're elated and excited to be a part of the world again and to have some impact in ending this cruel prohibition. that's what I got a lot from them. And of course, the way that the world has changed, even in just the 5 years that Dale Schaefer was in prison, the way that the world has changed is always just amazing to them. And they want to take advantage of every opportunity. So coming up on the show today, we are going to be speaking with Dale Schaefer in a
fingerboard
extended interview with, sorry about that, an extended interview with Dale Schaefer on the show. And we'll also be talking with our, and that one's going to be a nice long interview here toward the end of the show. And then we're also going to be speaking or going to be hearing from Todd McCormick, longtime cannabis activist and in California, who gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Arjen Roskam from the Netherlands. You may know him from the Strain Hunters. That's coming up in our Across the Pond segment. So that'll be our Toker Talk Radio for today, because unfortunately I can't get the phone lines to work yet in the remote studio. If you're out here in the Las Vegas area and you'd like to meet up, I'll be here this evening looking for fun. So hit me up at Radical Russ on social media. Maybe we can hook up. And maybe you can hook me up. You know me, I don't travel with the stuff anymore. Be right back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com, helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
One of America's leading exports over the past 50 years has been the global war on drugs. Through UN treaties, we have bent the world to accept our marijuana prohibition. Learn how our allies in Europe are fighting for their freedom as we go across the pond.
Arjen Roskam was part of an international panel, and here he's receiving an award from Todd McCormick.
Not be gay. I did start my cannabis career in a closet, so... and I'm really proud to be up here right now. 22 years ago this year, I went to Amsterdam for the first time for the first Cannabis Cup, and I met a young man and his wonderful wife who was running the coolest coffee shop in Amsterdam at the time. It was called The Greenhouse. It was on Tolstraat, and in the past 2 decades, I've watched my friend expand into 4 coffee shops in Amsterdam, 2 more in Spain, and then start a Strain Hunters company that was bringing attention to the indigenous cannabis that is growing all over the world. A lot of us get, you know, caught up in our hybrids and what's happened in the last 20, 30 years of cannabis, but we really don't recognize that cannabis has played a crucial role in so many civilizations around the globe. And my dear friend, Arjen Roskam, I'm very proud to present, please, Arian, come up, with the Lifetime Business Achievement Award. And I'd like to say, I wish you many more decades of success.
Well, thank you for coming. What an honor. It's a little bit strange for me to stand here because we are here in America, and until 5, 6, 7 years ago, nobody of us dared to come to America. I started 34 years ago growing, and it's a pretty remarkable story. I was I'm from Africa, original. I went on a holiday to Thailand and was traveling through the mountains and wind up in a very small village with a man who was treating heroin addicts at that time. And not to make the story very long, but the man completely intrigued me. I stayed there for a day, it was 3 days, and the end was a week. And when I left, he gave me a hand of seeds and he said, Arian, these seeds in the future can overthrow governments. That's how powerful those seeds were. At that time, I didn't really realize what he was saying because I was only 17 years old. This is 34 years ago. But I went back to Holland and started working with those seeds as one of the first in the world, especially in Europe. And as you know, in the meantime, Holland was a pretty pro-liberal country. We regulated euthanasia, abortion, gay marriage, and in the end, also marijuana. I started my coffee shop's greenhouse. And we had a message also there at the same time. A lot of people came from America. And we also were very politically involved. And we wanted to regulate more and more and more. And here we stand 34 years later. Great people from America came that time. Some of the organizers of this fair. Debbie, for example. Debbie Goldsberry with her great place now here in Magnolia. She started Berkeley Patient Group. Steve D'Angelo and all those people came. And we gave them a message, go back to America and please help us out because we were under real, real big pressure until now. It worked for a while. People like Woody Harrelson, who became great friends of us, and Bill Maher and all those people went back to America and start advocating our case here in America, with the result that today we are here. So we are very thankful for that, that you guys all have been activating for us and making sure that we have, that we can grow more plants and that we can regulate this plant better, because I think this is the best plant on the whole planet that has ever been existing and can cure a lot of very, very good things. It's one of the main reasons that in 2006 I started a documentary series called Strain Hunters. And it's not only just getting back land races, it's also showing the world that around the equator there's 200 million people depending on marijuana as their only thing they have. And we have done a few in the past. For example, Jamaica, just after we left, the president started regulating. Colombia, the same thing. And if you go now to St. Vincent and Trinidad and you look up the BBC documentary with the president of St. Vincent, 6 months after we were there and we showed the documentary on YouTube, the president of St. Vincent also called up to tourists to come to St. Vincent, and it was not a problem to have an ounce anymore. So through our documentaries, we are trying to give out a message to everybody that cannabis is okay, that it's a great plant, and basically it's the best superfood on this planet. I only got 4 minutes, so I have to keep it short. We have a panel at 14:20. I want to thank everybody who made this possible in the world, especially my family, my wife and my kids, all my partners like Joa, Olaf, Franco, Heiko, they're all here. I want to thank Todd for your longtime friendship, and I want to thank especially all the people who made this possible in the last 20, 30 years. And also, don't forget, guys, we have won the bad battle. But there's still a long way to go. There's a lot of people in prison, also friends of mine, and we are still fighting this battle. So this battle is not only happening here in America, this battle is also happening in other countries. So please be also very internationally involved, because we need your help actually more in other countries than here in America. But thank you again, and I hope to see you soon. Bye-bye.
Justin Roskam from the Strain Hunters, receiving the Lifetime Business Achievement Award at the International Cannabis Business Conference. If you'd like to hear more from Arjun, Todd McCormick, and other international representatives, including representatives from Spain and Portugal, I don't know if we had any Uruguayans. I think the Uruguayan didn't make it this time. But check out my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalrust. We'll have all of these uploaded for you throughout the rest of this week. Stay tuned. Our special extended interview with former federal marijuana POW Dale Schaefer is coming up next. I'm Radical Russ, live from Las Vegas on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
From high atop Mount Soledad in San Diego, California, 100 feet above sea level. Good morning. It's Good News with cannabis nurse Heather.
This plant is amazing. Positive change is happening. We did it. No matter who you are, you can make a positive impact on the world.
I would rather be illegally alive than legally dead.
And that quote helped to give you strength.
Nurse Heather is only on CannabisRadio.com.
Good morning, cannabis nurse Heather.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back to the International Cannabis Business Conference, day two at the Hyatt Regency. I'm Radical Russ with CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show. And joining me here is a man I'm really excited to be talking to because he's sitting here and not a cell. It's Dale Schaefer. How you doing, Dale?
Well, I'm not sleeping on yoga mats or eating bologna anymore. Trust me on that one.
Yeah, that's a nice thing. For folks, you may not know this story, but I've told this story before on the show. It was chronicled in the book Cool Madness. It was the story of Dr. Molly Fry and the aforementioned Dale Schaefer sitting next to me, who were tricked by the cops. And it's just such a insidious thing they do where the cops get a fake ID, but it's a real ID. And then they use it to get a recommendation that's a real recommendation.
Yeah.
And they use that to entrap people like you. Tell people, you know, the thumbnail story of what happened there.
Well, the story begins in 97 when Molly was diagnosed with breast cancer. And at that point, she's a physician, and there's been physicians in her family since the Civil War. And up until they removed cannabis from the formulary in the 1940s, every doctor used it, including doctors in her family.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't want people to think I'm cannabis naive. I started smoking in high school, okay? Made it all the way through college, the military, law school, and, you know, if brain cells were being torn up, I was adding a lot as I was studying. So, okay, we knew what we needed to do. We went to talk to her oncologist, and when she mentioned, I want to get a recommendation, his asshole snapped shut like a cigar cutter. What? He backed up against the wall. His face got pale.
Yeah.
And at that point, you really understand. doctors with a lot invested don't have a hair on their butt, okay? Molly was not out in active practice at that point. She was home being a home mom, and I was out practicing law. And we had to get her healthy because she was told, if you don't have this four rounds of chemo, this really terrible stuff, you're going to die. And we had little children. So, okay, this is not a rocket science deal. I went out to the black market where I knew people. I started buying pot at $4,000 a pound. It's like, oh, my God, I got to make a lot of money to do this. It'll grow from a seed. I had 27 acres. I plant some in the backyard. I got five or six plants. I think that'll probably do us. She was using 2 ounces a week, and I had to recalculate stuff. Long story short, one day my neighbor comes over and goes, the cops are watching your property. I damn near shot one of them. He was up in a tree. I went, oh, okay. So Molly picked the phone and said, get your ass out here. We're not doing anything illegal. I got cancer. Boom, they show up. And she's not there. But I used to represent cops. They all knew who I was. And I said, come on, guys, let's go take a look. She's got cancer. What is the deal here?
Yeah. In California, folks.
In California, okay.
Yeah.
Now, Molly comes out, and of course, both of her breasts are removed, and her hair is growing back, but you can tell she's been ravaged by this. And because they knew who we were, we had been in the courts helping indigent people. I was doing a lot of pro bono work for things like that. The judges all knew us. And they go, okay, Molly and Dale, if you guys will take a look at somebody and say, these people are legit patients, we won't waste time running after everybody says they're a medical patient, they're really not. Okay, so we call up Todd Micaria.
Todd's
doing this. Okay, we go meet with Todd, you know, and to be frank, burned a couple bowls. He had a vaporizer, the volcano.
Right.
I mean, he didn't. Okay, Todd, he breaks out his book and he goes, here, go back to the 1830s and read O'Shaughnessy. You know, the hemp, the Indian Hemp Commission report, you know, the Panama Canal report, the LaGuardia report. He goes, this is why I left the federal government, because you read this, you go, well, what's the question? The feds have their head up their ass. And we worked on paperwork. I'm an attorney. How do I keep people safe? So I opened my law practice to consultation, and Molly worked for me as my consultant because I could protect everybody's privacy. The attorney-client privilege is much stronger than the doctor-patient privilege.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't want anybody to know who these people were. But we gave them a piece of paper notarized, and we said, if you get in trouble, we will be in court for you. Nobody else in the state, except, well, Todd would do it, but no other doctor in the state had the balls to even write one, let alone dare to show up in court and say, well, of course, I gave him a recommendation. Okay, that started our headbutting. We were no longer inside the law enforcement establishment now. Now we're on the outside, and of course, you know what can happen with that.
Yeah, yeah. So they put together a case, the feds here, where they collected plants over. Because if folks listen to my show, they know there's 100 plant mandatory minimum.
Yes, there is.
And they usually don't bother unless they can get 100 plants. And the thing that was insidious about this is you guys never grew 100 plants at once.
No, no. They first showed up in 1999, and I want to say I had somewhere 20 to 25 plants, okay? Because Molly, I'm a hemophiliac with a blown out back. We had a friend who was an AIDS patient, and so I was basically at that point a caregiver for two people, okay,
right,
plus myself, and nobody could tell you what the limit was, so I threw some plants out there I thought would work, okay? They show up and count them, and they tried to scare us, and I don't scare that easily. Okay, you're doing a fine job taking great care of your wife. You're going to be fine. What does that mean? Well, you're fine, but everybody else is not. Whoa, hang on. What do you mean? I'm okay because I was your friend, and I'm a white dude, and that's okay. Everybody else is going to get pinched. And so we started at loggerheads over this, but they were counting plants, and I was happy to have them up. I want to comply. The DA wouldn't talk to me, so I ran for district attorney. And boy, was I a turd in their punch bowl, because I had my friends show up with, you know, softball questions for them. If grandma's got cancer and grandpa's going pot, are you going to throw him in jail and prosecute him? look in the camera and you tell the constituents you're not going to do that. Well, from that, we forced them to the negotiating table and we got written guidelines for the county. And of course, I stayed within those, come up and check and make sure I'm complying. Okay. But they started counting plants, and there's a 5-year statute of limitations for the Federal Controlled Substances Act, and if you reach 100 plants within a 5-year statute, minimum mandatory of 5 years.
Yeah.
You get 1,000 plants, you're looking at a 10-piece. Plus, the sentencing guidelines will start tagging more stuff on.
Sure.
Okay. I didn't understand. My friends are going, oh, you're cool. And I say, don't grow more than 99 plants. Okay. But the next year you grow one, and now you're at a five-year minimum. And nobody thought they would do that. We just like, oh, no, you don't get caught with 100 plants. Okay, that's simple.
Yeah.
Until I'm being charged with what? And it's 21 USC 841 is the statute that says 100 plants is a minimum mandatory. And I'm charged with what? So we start asking questions. What is this about? Well, you grew over 100 plants. No, I didn't. Well, do the math.
What?
What? That's... You know, somebody said, well, can they do that? I said, well, the statute doesn't say they can't. So if you don't tell them they can't, guess what? They will do it.
Right. It's like, imagine getting busted for statutory rape with a 20-year-old girl because 5 years ago she was 15. Right? Mm-hmm. Like
this. Well, because you tapped her once when she was less than 18 and, okay, we're going to get you.
Yeah.
Well, because we had science and law in the family, Molly and I both went, okay, we're going to address this with reason.
Sure.
Okay, there's your first, I tell people, don't try to be logical with law enforcement.
Well, it's like, what?
It's like teaching a pig to sing, okay?
Waste
it
your
pisses
time.
Pisses off the pig and wastes everybody's time, yeah. Okay? But the county health officer, who is a physician, is like, dude, don't try to tell us. The LD50 is 1,500 pounds in 15 minutes. It ain't going to kill somebody. It's effective, and the addiction potential is very low. What is the question? It ain't heroin, okay? And he had to kind of reluctantly go, yeah, I know that, but politically speaking, I don't give a rat's ass about your politics. People are going to jail here. Now, idealism, Russ, got me in prison because I was incensed. You're arresting black people. No one followed me into a boardroom when I was selling pot to the, you know, the people who were making decisions when I was practicing law, and the guys who are now on the bench were out in my car smoking bud with me. No one followed me, the white dude, around, but these black brothers and these Latino guys are going to prison. This is crazy. I'm incensed. I'm still incensed.
Yes.
After 5 years of looking at the ceiling, eating bologna, it's like, you know what? Pragmatism. I've got to be a lot more pragmatic about this because where we are right now is not acceptable. How do you move the ball forward? I'm not sure. I'm not sure I like any of the things that are in front of us, but if something doesn't get done, we're still here. And the establishment wants us to stay right here because they're making money off of our misery.
Yes, yes. So you just finished your five-year sentence. How many months ago did you get out?
I was discharged from custody September the 8th.
And they still have you on papers for different things?
I'm on paper technically for 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how is that working out for you? I mean, you're here at this conference, obviously, so you're...
Well, it's a bit complicated. At first, I was on travel restrictions. I had to get permission to leave the Eastern District of California, the federal district. It wasn't too tough to come to the Bay Area, but anything else, I had to do 2 weeks in advance, get permission, tell them what I'm doing, where am I going, addresses. I mean, just the car I'm driving in, it's like, yeah. You know what, I'm going to go knock over a bank or something somewhere. Okay, I got transferred to low offender status, okay, which means my travel restrictions are all removed as of January 1st.
That's
I can go anywhere in the country I want. Now, my free speech rights are still available, and I would like to, frankly, get back to Washington, D.C. My former campaign manager works with Rohrabacher. We're going to try to do something because my whole family's Republican.
Okay.
I talk Republican well. I talk cop real well because I know all about them. Okay. I agree with some stuff. Other things, we are, you know, my dad and I were like Archie Bunker and Meathead. Okay. So they know that, okay, yeah, your dad bought you a dog collar because you had long hair, but we know what you're all about, so we're going to overlook some stuff. I know how to talk in a lot of different languages to these people. There is a potential right now, I mean, Scalia may screw this whole thing up, but a potential now to go to the Republicans and say, you know, there's this thing called the 10th Amendment and this overarching principle of freedom, which we've lost since 9/11. That was the excuse to just ratchet us in mm-hmm. and take our privacy rights away. If you're a libertarian at heart at all, if I want to smoke a joint in my house or I want to have weird sex with some woman or man or, I mean, not... hopefully not a billy goat, but you know, if it's consensual in my own house, who's going to look in my window and come in and arrest me? What the hell is this all about? Okay, it's a freedom issue. That appeals to a lot of the conservatives who have a libertarian bent. Okay, and quite frankly, I think the Commerce Clause has been taken way, way, way too far. This is a federalism issue that the 10th Amendment says clearly, if it's not guaranteed in the Constitution to the federal government, it all belongs to the states.
Right.
Okay. And they don't mention being able to control what I grow in my backyard, even though the court dredged up this 1940 decision, Wickard versus Filburn, to smack Angel Raich down. I was as horrified as that, I think, when they appointed Bush as president, but you know, that's a whole nother issue. I was disappointed in what they did, and the liberals jumped on board with this because they want to keep expanding, and the Commerce Clause is a great shoehorn to get into this whole thing, okay? I want to ratchet it back. Not that there isn't some room for the federal government, because I remember Billy Bob and Ted Rex, you know, letting, you know, their favorite friend who hung the black guy off because, you know, we're not gonna convict you. That's a fear of not having a federal system that can watch this. But I think those particular days should be gone, unless you live in Ventura County and you beat cops and you go there and Rodney King, he doesn't get any justice. But, you know, that's a whole nother issue, Rod, there's so many layers to this stuff of the injustice. When I was sitting in prison, I was face to face every day with the injustice of the war on drugs.
Yeah.
It is horrible. It's omnipresent. When you wake up in the morning and you start counting the heads, the vast majority are black or Latino, and they are not the big kingpins. They were some guy was pinched, trying to make a living in the hood, because that's the game in the hood. I mean, when I got out of high school and went to college, if I wanted a job, doors opened, and
yeah,
I got a job. I mean, we were all smoking pot, and nobody seemed to care. But if you're of color and you ain't got a job and you're watching the street corner while somebody's, you know, selling rock or dime bags or whatever, you're all going to go to jail. They're going to beat the crap out of you along the way. And, well, you're just a bunch of criminals.
Yeah. And the worst aspect of it, and this has especially affected female incarceration, especially African-American female incarceration, is something I call the girlfriend effect, where, you know, everybody involved in the conspiracy has someone to snitch on except for the girlfriend. And so she's the one that gets the major time.
I was at a halfway house in Frisco, and I met up with a woman, just a beautiful African-American woman, probably my daughter's age, okay? Heather's about 40. She was in that range. And I started asking her, what happened to you? And she told me, well, my boyfriend was, you know, running cocaine, and I sort of kind of knew about it, but I was staying out of the way. He's keeping me out of the way. They get rolled up, and I'm in the mix here. My name's up and all this paperwork, okay? So guess what? Nobody was there to help her. So she did 10 years because she was in a relationship with this guy who was out running coke, okay?
Yeah.
And whether or not you think that's a bad guy or not, which I really don't, but, you know, she should have never been involved. But as soon as somebody gets arrested, they put the gun to your head if you're looking at a 10 or 15, 20-year sentence unless you start running your mouth.
Yeah.
Okay? And in the sentencing guidelines, it's called a 5K. And it was I don't think it's comical, but you could tell a 5K when they came into the compound. Some guy, yeah, I got pinched with 30 pounds of crank and I got 18 months. And we're all backing away. It's like, yeah, I know what you are.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because that math, I mean, I can do that math. Okay,
I can do it in my head.
And they're all over the place. They encourage rat on people, snitch on people, because the cops and the prosecutors don't want to do their jobs anymore.
Sure, sure. And it's a frustrating aspect of this to me is the being charged with a crime and then being charged with the conspiracy of a crime. I mean, I know it technically doesn't violate the double jeopardy parts, but it feels like it does.
Well, I don't know if you remember back when Lynn Bias, his heart exploded,
yes.
Okay? Tip O'Neill was aggressively fighting Reagan on any of these mandatory sentences and wrapping a lot of other things in to make it easier to get big sentences and convictions. When this kid Lynn Bias died, Tip O'Neill, because it was personally him, backed away. That's when they brought in the minimum mandatories, okay, and 846 of the controls, which is the conspiracy angle.
Right.
Okay. Let's use conspiracy because we can throw a big net out and bring a lot of people in. okay? Before that, you had to go out and do your, you know, your gumshoe work and catch people.
Yeah.
Get wiretaps and hear them saying stuff for real, okay? It was, the mafia was their target.
Right.
Well, it was easy to take that and go, well, we're going to go after, you know, Guido, who's out there, you know, shooting people in the streets and running heroin, and we're just going to, you know, change our azimuth here and go over this direction because we can get these people with pot or whatever, okay?
Right.
And that's when you see the steep climb in prison population. Okay, not that it wasn't rising after Nixon's debacle, but that's when the laws solidified and they took discretion away from judges because, of course, we got to have sentencing parity across the whole country, okay? And we want to make it easier to be able to, the tools, they call them the tools, okay? A gun to your head is a tool. A 10-year sentence is a tool for the law enforcement and the prosecutors to try and get more convictions. For God's sakes, we have a 95% conviction rate
right.
in this country, Russ, okay?
Yes.
You go to Europe and they're looking 50, 60%.
Right, and with something like 96%
yeah.
plead out.
Oh, yeah. Well, and of those that do go to trial, I think it's like 60% still get convicted. So it's called a snowball's chance in hell. Now, in our case, our judge, who was a Clinton appointee, used to work for Gallo, Damrell, Frank Damrell, when we finally got to him, and that's a whole other story of how we had to go through all the judges in our county before our district before we finally got to him. He had his clerk come out and make it known to us that I got to give you a 5-year sentence, but I ain't going to give you a second more, okay? And so I had no disincentive other than try the case.
Right.
Okay? So Tony Serra represented me.
Oh.
Larry Lichter took Molly's case, and we went in there, and we pulled their pants down in front of a jury and in front of the media because that was my goal. If you're going to do this, okay, and we were told, you're golden children, you should never have been involved in this. You're a doctor and a lawyer, you should have never... Involved in what? Your hypocrisy? So we pulled, and Tony did a wonderful job of pulling their pants down every day.
Tony Serra's been pulling pants down for decades, too.
Well, and they expose their zipper so often, Russ.
It's too easy.
It's oh my... Well, this guy who came to my house... and said, oh, I smelled marijuana. I got back in my car, and, oh, I was feeling dizzy. And Tony goes, did you enjoy the music on your ride home? And we're all cracking up. It's like, that's another one. You're so full of shit. You're not going to smell a smell from the terpenoids and the flavonoids from some bud I might have gotten on me and be intoxicated. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. But they, you know, actually.
If it were that easy, I'd have saved a lot of money.
Oh, my God.
My
I mean, I'm not allowed to use marijuana, but it smells good. I mean, if that really worked, I don't know what that would mean because I'm tested for the metabolites of THC.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not using it because
sure.
I'm still being tested, things like that. But that's the level of ludicrousness that these people in the DEA, these rabid prohibitionists, think they can throw out there. And no one will ever hit it back to their side of the net and go, yeah, let me call you on your bullshit.
Yeah.
What? And I'm telling you, the whole time I was in the pre-incarceration stage and when I went to prison, I called myself a turd in your punch bowl. You're going to tell me something and tell me that, oh, people are going to rely on what I say? I'm going to tell you, hey, let me tell you about the studies, okay? What? Yeah, it's called science. Okay, that's how we're going to defeat you. Because just because your mama told you something and you believe it, that's your opinion. I could give a rat's ass about your opinion. I want to know what are the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan Russo is a friend of mine.
Yes.
Ethan, okay, what's up? Don Abrams, same thing. What's going on here? There's a few other people I haven't seen in years or haven't met yet. I want to go talk to them, look them in the face. Tell me where the endocannabinoid system understanding is now, where you think it's going. Because there's battles to be fought on you're an impaired driver. Bullshit. People have been driving stone for a
right.
long time.
I like to say that legalization of marijuana does not invent cars and marijuana.
No. Oh, my God.
They've been around a while.
Oh, my God. I was on a panel, Russ, with Dale Sky Jones and another former U.S. attorney over in Sacramento. Peter Hecht had written a book, and there was a chapter on us. So come on in and talk about this. And the former sheriff from Sacramento, John McGinnis, was there. You know, he's sort of the bastion of the conservative on KFPK radio. You know, I'm going to roll in and I'm going to represent the conservatives. He started talking about marijuana and alcohol and driving.
Yeah.
And I just had to stop him. Stop. Why do you keep lumping those two together? Okay. Because if you use cannabis, every study you've ever done, and you know this, you can't back away from it, says you have a little veering inside the lines, but if anything, you're going to stop 100 yards short of the stop sign and creep up to it.
Right.
You're not going to blow through it and hit somebody broadside. Okay?
Right.
So stop it. And these were all full of college students that are my children's age. And it's like, I'm talking right to you guys. Don't put up with this stuff. Stand up and challenge these people who think they're authority figures, who are really just full of shit to their eyeballs, and make them substantiate it. Not with, well, I believe this. Well, I don't care. You know, your opinion is what? Not worth a crap if you can't back it up.
Yeah. Show your work. Citations help.
Well, but see, when you're trained as a lawyer, you learn that anytime somebody wants to give you their opinion, you stop them right now. And you object. This is a lack of foundation. I want to ask you, why should we believe you? Where did you go to school? Where did you get this experience? But people will take someone's opinion and go, oh, because he said it, it must be true. No. I want to back up a little bit. And that's how my mind works. When somebody starts to tell me their opinion, I say, well, you can believe anything you want. The earth is flat, you know. That like Galileo was told, well, you can't challenge that, you know, we have a solar system. You can't say that. Well, I'm looking up there at the sky and tell, you know, that's why I say this. We're trained to stop people. It's irrelevant. It's hearsay. It lacks foundation. It's just your opinion, and we don't care about your opinion. That's how I see what people tell me. Okay. Now, some of them are great stories. But when you want someone to believe it, now we got a whole nother animal to try to dissect. And when somebody tries to take a position of authority and throw out bovine scatology like that, it's like, no, back it up a little bit. And Dale was sitting right next, Dale Sky Jones, and it's like she and I were trying to tag team this guy. Stop, you know, come on, stop, don't. But there's so much propaganda that's been fostered for so many decades that people will just say, oh, well, it must be true because it's been said so many times. Really? Is that your position? I don't buy that at all. I just think that facts and people who have the credentials to state the facts will ultimately, at the high levels, attack the people who are in positions of power who want to rely on fear and propaganda. Okay, but that's just one level of attack. At the bottom, it's clear the people are out there going, we just don't buy this, man. You're smoking a joint. You're probably a nicer guy. We don't buy this stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But that's at the electoral level, and that's the complications of politics, which now the people in the industry, as we get closer to legalization, it's going to actually happen. Okay. And then the question is, well, now what? Has anybody thought post-legalization? Is this movement going to split into conservative and liberal and independent wings? I mean, because that's sort of the tribing up that we see in everything else.
Yeah.
And then what's going to be the issue then? I don't know, Russ, because yeah. I'm coming out of 5 years being away and watching TV, which is sort of controlled, and stepping back in this where I can look somebody in the eye. Because that's how I was raised. Look somebody in the eye, okay? Especially shake a man's hand and look him in the eye, okay? Because then you can say, you know, you may be able to be a good actor and bullshit me once, but once I find out you did it, we're done, okay? You can't tell what people are pulling your leg in the media, things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm more into, I want to set out with my friends, okay? Tell me on the ground what's happening, okay? The physicians I know, tell me how it's happening, not only your understanding, but the politics, where at your level. The Veterans Administration. I'm a vet from the Vietnam era. PTSD continues to be a problem. I mean, I'm over 60 years old now, and dudes who have survived that long without killing themselves, or I mean, they have wrecked their brains and their bodies with alcohol, homelessness, incarcerations, because what really happened is that war with no front line and no enemy in another uniform that you could say, there's the bad guy, messed their minds up horribly. And now a whole new generation has gone to the Middle East and same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, who was the bad guy? Well, every place I looked was the bad guy.
Right.
And these kids, I mean, I call them kids. They're really not, Russ. They're They're my children's age, but they're adults. So it's not a pejorative, folks out there. I mean, if I call you a kid. But they have had their minds twisted up. And the VA, I've seen the VA pull someone's drugs, all of them, because they test positive for cannabis.
Yep.
And it's like, how draconian.
Yeah.
You can't even talk to them on the compound. I had probably 150, 200 Vietnam era vets that were coming in, and they get their recommendation once a year, and we'd shut the door and we'd all have a crying session. Oh, how you doing? Oh, you're not getting along with the wife, you know. All the real problems that they were able to talk about now, where before they couldn't sleep, they were like a hair trigger ready to go off. Now it's like, oh, you know, the wife's, we're not getting along on this and that. And oh, I remember the days, and then we'd have a good cry. It's like, okay, we can all do that. Because I was a corpsman. It's like, doc, let me tell you about it. Sit down and tell me about it, okay? I'm not a threat to you. Let's hear what you have to say. That's the healing that takes place with cannabis and a vet. And I've been there in the trenches, and it just blows my mind that someone whose butthole is so tight they won't even consider cannabis, and they'll let these vets blow their heads off to the tune of, what, 20 a day, something like that?
22 a day,
yeah. And it's like, well, this is a political problem. No, it's not. It's your tight asshole problem is what it is. This is about compassion. You cannot kill yourself on an overdose with this, okay? It's effective. The addiction profile, if you want to use that word addiction, is so relatively low that it should be moved further down in the consideration of physicians, okay? Yeah. I mean, not that I haven't seen people who can't get off the couch and stop eating Hershey bars and ho-hos and watching TV, okay, if that's you, then, you know, you're probably addicted to spanking your monkey, too, okay? I don't know if that's true addiction. I belong to a group that's trying to bring harm reduction and move away from the NAAA 12-step models and get more sense in treating drug abuse or substance abuse disorders. And just, first of all, don't let somebody die with that, because they are a human being. And just because you're a heroin addict and you're sucking your water out of the, you know, to shoot up out of the gutter, it doesn't mean you don't deserve some compassion. We got to move beyond that. We may be mad at them, but that's not a reason to throw them in jail and let them die.
Yeah.
So once we get beyond that, then perhaps we can have some more discussions, because cannabis should be so simple. I mean, first of all, why can't we grow hemp everywhere in this country?
Yeah. The hemp part is the most unbelievable, isn't it?
When you go back and see, this is where Todd and I had a lot of discussion about this too, and you look at what happened with Pancho Villa and the Mexican Civil War that was pouring over the borders, and they grabbed Hearst's timberland in Mexico, and he's all butthurt about that. And then you see the yellow journalism, that role started going, but in the 1920s, the decorticator was invented. So now you don't have to have peasants rotting the stuff in the field. You know, it's like any other commercial product. You cut it, stick it in, fiber pulp comes out. And so Scripps in San Diego and a few other people, even Hearst, went out into the Imperial Valley and grew some. Let's see what this is like. Well, they decided we're going to follow timber, okay? And then the DuPont company is working on synthetic plastics, okay? And petroleum was the basis for these petrochemical plastic agents. And, at, you know, you'll never get anybody to admit that DuPont had nylon in its back pocket when Anslinger lied to Congress, and, you know, that whole thing is just a debacle. If you read what they did to the AMA representative, showed up,
said, "We already talked about it.
We've had enough about you," because he was fighting against, you know, medicine trying to be given to everybody. The AMA was against it, and FDR. I mean, see, I'm a historian, so I go back and look at this. There's some things that happened that brought this to the fore.
Sure.
And Anslinger's hooked up to the Mellon family, which is, you know, the DuPont financiers. So behind closed doors, who knows what was going on.
Yeah.
But within a year of the Marijuana Tax Act in 37, DuPont had nylon out there on the market. And, of course, the argument was, well, we can go to the Philippines and get Manila hemp. We don't need this. And the seeds, well, as long as they're denatured, the bird industry, well, we want to have seed. Well, you got to denature them. You can have all you want.
Yeah.
That's still in the law, okay? And so those groups were given sort of a favorable situation. But I've smoked Kansas Dish Bush before. And One time's all it takes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that field ain't good. And then the word will get out. You grow all the hemp you want. No one's going to come steal your plants.
Right,
okay?
Right.
So why was hemp put into this? Okay. I have some suspicions, and they're all nefarious.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are today, and we still can't manage to say if it doesn't have less than 0.3% THC, then it's a psychoactive. Oh, shut up.
I love it when they say the potency of marijuana has risen from 1% to 2% in the 1970s. Like, look, I saw the Cheech and Chong movies, and I've seen the clothing of the 70s. They weren't smoking 1% to 2% weed.
Well, I was a connoisseur of hash myself, okay? Temple balls, blonde Lebanese, hand-rubbed charas from, you know, the northern part of India, just because what was commercially available was what we called, you know, dirt Mexican.
Right.
Okay? You smell it and go, oh, man, what, do you bury this in the backyard or something? Okay. It wasn't bad, but when you get the stems and seeds out, you go, okay, well, it'll get you high a little bit. But then Panama Red and Oaxacan and some other better varieties started to come on the market as bud. But still, you could get from around the world hand-rubbed and sieved products, and they were available, mm-hmm. okay? And it's like, you know, I don't mind smoking that Mexican stuff, but, you know, I got a grandma hash. Let's go out. And then hash oil shows up. It's like, oh, dude, this ain't your daddy's dirt weed.
And that's so funny that you know, now, especially as it's hitting the East Coast, everybody's freaking out about shatter and wax and dabbing as if hash oil were something brand new.
Oh, please. Please. I remember, and you know, I'm pretty brutal on it. I smoked pot, you know, my life going to college. I remember the last day of a sociology class, me and a bunch of my buddies, the guy shows up, I got some hash oil. So he dabs it on the papers, rolled up, and we were fried, okay? And I go into sociology class, and the teacher, you know, she was boring, okay? Let's be frank. And we just didn't say anything. Well, I'm stoned to the bone. And she goes, anybody got any comments? Well, yeah. When you take a 2-minute inhalation and then you roll on monotone for 5 minutes, it gets difficult to sit in your class. Oh my God. I was brutally honest, but it's like, I think that was the hash oil there. Okay. And I went from a straight A because I got an A on every test to an A minus because she just had to send a message.
Right.
Yeah, all right. Biatch. I understand. I won't do that again, but. I've been down some of these roads before.
That's amazing. What, it's been an amazing time sitting here talking with you, Dale, and you've got so much going on now. You say you're working forward to you know, trying to get legalization to happen. If people want to get in touch with you, learn more, or get educated, what would you suggest?
Well, I will tell you that I have been IT challenged for a long time and being out of commission for 5 years. My daughter is helping me. I have a law firm website or Facebook site called Dale Schaefer Law, and I'm also on Facebook, which is about as much as I can do. Twitter comes across, and I look at it and go, well, what am I supposed to do with this now? Educate me, okay? And I'm getting better educated. Some people have come forward to try to help, like a blog and things like that. But right now, the Dale Schaefer Law site on Facebook is where we're posting some things, and my office just got set up officially on Friday. They put the fax line in. And MRSA, I mean, that term is sort of ironic.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Because in prison, MRSA was rampant. Yeah.
Sure.
Mark Emery got MRSA.
Yep.
We thought we were going to lose him. Anyway, that came on board since I was released from prison. Okay, so now I'm curious how they're going to flesh this out.
By the way, listeners, that's the Medical Marijuana RSA.
Regulation and Safety Act.
Yeah, the new Medical Marijuana Acts in California.
MMRSA or whatever.
MMRSA.
Yeah, okay.
Not you a know, mimosa.
Methicillin resistant staph aureus is MRSA, and it's deadly.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But MMRSA is a skeleton that needs to be fleshed out. And I've got many of my friends out there who ask me, what's this going to mean? Well, I don't know because they haven't put meat on the bones yet, but if you're curious, then you need to be paying attention at your local level. They took away the March 1st deadline for all the knee-jerk bans, and now there's time. Okay, there's going to be all these levels of licensure, okay? And if you want to be involved in this at all, take a look at what you think your community can get involved in and regulate, okay? And that happens at Board of Supervisors and City Council meetings. And as that gets on board, you have to have those local licenses, permits to even go apply for a state one. And so I will get involved in that process just because I helped found a group in El Dorado County that stayed very close to the sheriff and DA, trying to make sure that you're not going after medical patients. The county I'm in right now, Placer County, is talking about trying to set some regulatory frameworks up as this moves towards real working businesses. Sacramento County, I have friends that have dispensaries and things there. I have to stay away from counseling someone to violate federal law or aiding and abetting them, because that would violate my supervised release. So everybody hears from me, it's against federal law. You understand that? And I'm here to tell you, if they pinch you, you're going to prison. Okay? Now, if you decide to do this, the Ogden and Cole memos and Rohrabacher's pulling back funding helps at the federal level, but it's still federally illegal. The state level, state law is coming on board, and understanding what it is and teaching people is the easy part of it. I was never a business lawyer, but I can certainly draft contracts. I've represented people that had businesses, and the framework of a business, the contracts, agricultural contracts have been in existence forever. Transportation contracts, who's responsible for when, testing, if it's dirty and pesticide ridden, who's responsible for paying for it, okay, who takes the hit, who insures for that. These are things that legitimate businesses plan, because you plan a business for at least a year, okay, and you got to have that much understandable stability. And so the people who are flying under the radar are wondering, well, I really can't get these permits they want me to have on January 1st because they don't exist. How do I say I'm in a priority position when this comes on board when I couldn't satisfy the law? Well, right. Welcome to the real world of the law.
Oh. Okay. It's
so
a big mess.
I'm trying to understand this, Russ, and for the 5 years, or actually 52 months I cooked in prison, I went from being pissed off at the world, okay? I got two daughters-in-laws, four new grandchildren, and if you know me at all, those are things that are very important to me. Okay, anger does nothing. I want to take those things that I sat there and stewed on and turn them into pragmatic action. I have an experience with the system. I've been a lawyer for almost 30 years. I was married to a physician, a cancer patient. I understand a lot of this stuff, and I'm not afraid to stand up and speak out. They're not going to throw me in prison for telling the federal government you're wrong. They may not like it, but they're wrong on so many levels, and so are the state, the narcotics officers, the DA associations. They still will tell you, oh, there's no value to medical marijuana. Oh, fight me.
Yeah. Well, Dale, thank you for stopping by and talking to us. This has been...
You are welcome.
Very wonderful, wide-ranging discussion.
Push the button and we'll talk all day, all right?
That's right.
I look forward to coming back and chatting with you again.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more from the International Cannabis Business Conference here in San Francisco, California. I was so thrilled to be able to get the chance to talk with Dale Schaefer. And his daughter, Heather, big thanks to her for finding me and getting us hooked up for that interview. Follow him at Dale Schaefer Law on Twitter. That's DaleSchaefer Law. Dale Schaefer Law on Twitter. You can also find Dale Schaefer Law on Facebook. But that's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show, live on CannabisRadio.com from the Hooters Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Got a couple of meetings I got to make it to with some potential angel investors. And then tomorrow, early morning flight to Seattle for the CannaCon coming up Thursday through Saturday. I'll have all the coverage for you on CannabisRadio.com. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.